up to this point today, you've heard about two different planning frameworks, one for mitigation projects and one for adaptation projects. We've had Gila River talk about an integrated approach for climate mitigation through their recycling program. Tracy Horst talked about developing a climate-specific energy efficiency program to reduce emissions. And now we have Jeff Mears from the Oneida Nation in Wisconsin talking about an integrated approach to climate adaptation and talking about not only the planning process, but also his reflections on the way they've been able to integrate this into some of their programs. So I'd like to turn it over to Jeff.
Okay, thank you very much. I have my presentation up now. Is it available?
No, we're not actually seeing it. Did you select Screen Clean from the drop-down menu? Did you get a pop-up box from GoToWebinar?
Yes, I got it.
Great.
Is it up now?
Perfect.
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, my name is Jeff Mears. I'm the Environmental Area Manager for the Oneida Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin. I'm also an Oneida Tribal member, and I've been in the Environmental Division for 18 and a half years now. And I just want to say what I'm trying to do here is give a different, maybe broader perspective of tribes as modern governments providing services. And a lot of the stuff that we've done, and Leslie did a great job of covering that Oneida is also doing. Okay, this is the general overview then of the presentation I'm going to give. Just that reminder all the time that there are four forms of government: local, state, federal, and tribal. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the tribal governments and what we face and unique challenges in providing these governmental services. This is who we are, the three communities of Oneida. We're originally from New York. There's now distinct Oneida tribes in New York, in Canada, in the Thames, and then Oneida of Wisconsin. This is us in Wisconsin, then. We're in the northeast corner, just outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin. You can see the size of our reservation. We have, population-wise, I heard Choctaw had some 200,000 members. We have about 16,000 members nationwide. About 6,200 live on or near the reservation. The multi-jurisdictional issues, too, just a reminder to perhaps educate some of our federal agencies and share with the tribes some of the things that we face. It's easy to say to work with the local governments, but it's often confrontational. Oneida specifically, we've had lawsuits against the tribe, against some of the programs that we've started. Not that our right to start those programs, but the lawsuits actually go to trying to disestablish the reservation. In 1985, both counties sued us to disestablish it, basically get rid of the Oneida Reservation. But a federal court ruling did uphold our right to exist, upheld our treaty. But these are the kind of things that tribes face that normally most governments don't face. So the regulatory efforts are, it's very difficult for tribes to move in the same way that other governments do. So this is Oneida. You see in the slide here, a lot of, like I talk about, is infrastructure, what we need to protect. This is our internal infrastructure. The upper left is our health center. Upper right is our police department. The bottom two photos then are our elementary school or our turtle school. All of these programs that we've developed are basically since 1994 when we started gaming. That provides our base revenue like a property tax for another form of government. But what oftentimes people don't consider with tribes is that we also have an economy. So this just outlines that we have an economy, and all of these businesses that you see here are on the reservation. They lease land from the Oneida tribe. It's very important to us to have an economy besides the environment, and it's that coexistence that we work on all the time. I'm trying to advance the slide. Is there any issue then with advancing the slide?
You should be able to click or hit the arrow key.
Okay, there we go. Thanks. It worked now. This is just the organizational chart for environmental health and safety, and it's a lot on there, but I just want to demonstrate, I guess, that we're in a lot of different areas. We have a lot of employees, diversity of our programs. Our funding sources, like a lot of tribes, are EPA, BIA, Indian Health Service, and tribal funding. We have 37 employees. 29 of those are Oneida tribal members or other tribes. The Oneida as a total, we have 2,916 employees. and we have a professional, educated, experienced staff throughout the organization. This is the basic global warming's unequivocal climate change. So basically, this is the science. The only doubt is political and not scientific. I hope to show later on that we're past the point of having to explain science change anymore. This is the definition then of climate change adaptation. You can see some key things I heard discussed earlier, like minimize impacts and reduce vulnerabilities. And basically, for tribes, this is our survival plan. This is how we're going to survive into the future. It's not to cause people to panic, but certainly we need a sense of urgency as we move forward. Given some examples of what Wisconsin is going to face, looking at these are some of the models from the EPA and others from that IPCC, looking at hotter summers, days above 97 degrees, you know, which will mean more air conditioning, which will produce more ozone, produce more asthma attacks. But when we talk about heat, use the example of the 2003 European heat wave. Because it was in northern France, Germany, similar climates to what Wisconsin has, this was 11 days, and it got hot, but it got in the upper 80s, mid-90s, not crazy-type Phoenix heat. But yet, over that 11-day period, 50,000 people died. You can compare that to 2005 for Hurricane Katrina, 1,300 people died. But the European heat wave, you heard very little about. The point is that heat kills. It's the most dangerous thing we face. It kills the most people, more than tsunamis, more than hurricanes, more than anything else. Precipitation then in Wisconsin, we're looking at wetter winters, drier summers. It looks like it balances out annually, but it's the difference of how we're going to get that precipitation. Heavier storms, more rain in shorter periods of time. And what can happen then? We have a good example in Wisconsin in 1993 where Milwaukee's wastewater treatment plant was overrun with floodwaters. 400,000 people sick from cryptosporidium. I mean, that was still the biggest outbreak ever. But local heavy rains, storm sewers are not designed for the rainstorms that climate change predicts. This is a picture here in June of 2012, June of this year, from Duluth, Minnesota. Duluth, Minnesota, again, this was not a tsunami, not a hurricane, not a superstorm. They had about 10 inches of rain over 24 hours. The governor of Minnesota toured the area in Duluth, and he described it as horrific, the damage he's seen. Again, just heavy rain. Again, Duluth, Minnesota, this is a seal that was in the middle of an intersection. It was washed out of the zoo in Duluth, and several animals actually drowned. Again, heavy rains, the damage that they can do. This was 200 miles from Duluth in Neillsville, Wisconsin, central Wisconsin. A section of this rural road washed out. Three vehicles drove into this crevasse that was formed, and three people died from this. Again, just from heavy rains. This is something that we're facing now. We've seen examples of now, and we anticipate more in the future. Why are we concerned in Oneida? What do we have to do about it? This is Oneida's wastewater treatment plant. The design, again, was out in the past, was used, 100-year floodplains, for example, but climate change is a new normal. So we have to make sure, as part of our adaptation, is to make sure this plant is secure. This is another reason we need to be concerned with our infrastructure. This is an interchange, and you can see the nice thing is Oneida was sat at the table with the Department of Transportation, designed as a turtle. On the left is where our casino is located at Casino Hotel, and the right is the Green Bay Airport, Austin Straubel Airport. So you can imagine with a heavy rain event, if this road is washed out, the impact on our economy would just be tremendous. That's why we need to adapt. That's why we need to make sure our infrastructure can withstand the predictions of climate change. So to focus the organization, strategically align the organization on climate change, and that's very key. We talked about the federal budget, but tribal budgets are facing the same thing, no increases, no new hires. So this is a no-cost thing using existing staff. And I used, for an example, the balanced scorecard model. The balanced scorecard, I don't want to promote this exact tool for using, but it's just how we used it. We implemented this in 2005, and it's supposed to balance between financial measures and non-financial performance measures. But the important part to me was that the organization did not hire anyone new. They assigned existing staff. They were managers for the balanced scorecard. The entire organization had to submit strategic plans using this balanced scorecard model. There is no one-size-fits-all, but this is just one example of what can use. And a reminder what this is not. It's not about prevention. We need to adapt. And this is not short-term. It's not a fix and get back to normal. This is the new normal. So these are all the divisions in the United Tribe. We have six divisions. What we did is listed out underneath them their roles in climate change. You can talk about our health department, increase in invasive species and heat stress, things that they need to plan for budget-wise and just for infrastructure-wise. Community services, I listed there, green jobs and training. What kind of education will our youth need for the climate change-driven economy of the future. Environmentalists listed, we're already working on invasive species, fisheries, and a lot of different things. The point is, it's the entire organization. Climate change is not an environmental issue. It doesn't belong in one department, but it's throughout the entire organization. One of the key things we wanted to do is that baseline is where we're at to start. We did a staff survey, included the divisions of environmental development, land management, our health center, housing authority. This is a baseline. So basically, I wanted to know, what do you think of climate change? Do you think it's real? Do you think we can do anything about it? And the results were, to me, they were very encouraging. We have an educated staff. I asked them how many have college degrees. But you can see basically that they understand that they can make a difference in their professional and personal lives. It's not overwhelming. Everybody felt it was real. It's just our job now. We have to provide that outreach. We have to get out there and tell them about climate change and how they can plan for it. So climate change, said in there, there's a lot of difference between tribes and other governments. It's not an environmental issue. It's about human health and social impacts. And we keep using the same thing when we talk to management and elected leaders. This is the new normal, and this is how we have to operate. That's why we need to focus each one of our programs and our individuals, our already educated, experienced staff, on climate change. Again, tribes didn't cause climate change, but we certainly have to learn how to adapt and survive in this new climate change world. So this final one, this quote I have from Orrin Lyons, he's a Onondaga Turtle Clan, but the tribe that we come from when you come out the Haudenosaunee out in New York State, he's a clan person. We've looked at him a lot, and he's been speaking out on climate change for years. He spoke before the UN several times. And the last time I seen Orrin was in April of 2012. He was talking about the future of climate change. It's coming, but now he's talking about it being here. And he's 82 years old now. And if you Google him, you'll find he's just an author, and he's been around a long time. But he says, I now tell tribes to find high ground and good water. It's getting a little desperate when I've heard him speak over the years. But he's a longtime climate change advocate. But what I took away from that is that we need to be prepared. I mean, it's not just having environmental climate change coordinators, but we need lawyers to write laws, environmental staff, wardens, police, teachers, people in our administrative areas. We need experienced, educated tribal people to get this to deal with this new normal that we're going to deal with, that's climate change. So infrastructure refers not just to the built environment, but to the staff, to us, to education experience. It's an ongoing effort with us. It's not going to be, not a one-size-fits-all. I have met with our elected leaders, but I have not asked them to do a resolution yet. They're fully on board, but they're still in the wait-and-see and education mode. And we're going to be looking forward in the future and what exactly we're going to do. Right now, there's a lot of information out there. We need a lot of science to make our decisions. And I thank ITEP. I think they're doing a good job getting out there educating people. And we look forward to the future and see how we're going to be ready for it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. That was great.